States v. Duncan. Mr. Hamilton.
Thank you. My name is John Hamilton. I'm here from South Bend for Chris Duncan. This is a case, I think, of first impression. It follows Sandoval. It follows Harris, as the government has pointed out to me. It also follows other cases, including Castillo. And it's very unclear where we actually are. We're dealing with a mandatory minimum of 30 years for bank robbery, pardon me, for using a machine gun that was never charged in the context of a bank robbery that was prosecuted under 18 U.S.C. 2113D, which has as its outside a figure for sentence 25 years. In addition, the defendant was charged under 924C1A1 for having a gun, not brandishing, no machine gun, no semi-automatic weapon. And that would trigger a mandatory minimum of 5 years. So he's looking at a mandatory, a statutory maximum of 30 years, and he gets 38. I think we have, under these circumstances, under any of the Supreme Court's recent series of cases, a violation of his rights under the Sixth Amendment, since the government did not charge.
Yeah, but you have the Harris case standing athwart your position.
Yes, and the question is, what has the Supreme Court done in Blakely / Booker to Harris?
Well, it's obviously knocked the props out from under it, but the Supreme Court has been very emphatic that lower courts are not to overrule Supreme Court decisions, even if the, you know, rationale and so on has been demolished by a later case.
Right.
Doesn't that bind us?
Well, let me go about it in a slightly indirect way. I think Sandoval is closer on point to our situation today than Harris is. Sandoval,
Duncan, Harris is the same state. It's just one section away.
But it's an important section.
I don't understand. What's the difference between brandishing and whether there's a machine gun?
As the Sixth Circuit in the recent U.S. v. Harris Sixth Circuit case has pointed out, there seems to it, at least, to be a substantive difference between the brandishing, an act, rather than the thing used.
Now, I don't understand that. I don't understand that.
Well, Your Honor, it seems to me that what we really have a problem with, frankly, what I have a problem with is this whole theory that Harris is one of the later enunciations of somehow looking at the appearance of a statute in terms of its subsections and saying that depending upon whether or not you put a little...
I understand, but as I say, Harris is an unoverruled Supreme Court decision. I don't know what we can do about that.
Well, here's what I suggest to the court and ask the court to do, to distinguish Harris on the basis that it was dealing only with brandishing, and brandishing only dealt with a two-year enlargement of liability from 5 to 7, whereas when you're dealing with...
You can't make distinctions like that, pick the statute apart like that. So that's brandishing is 7, discharge of the firearm is 10.
Yes.
So you're going to distinguish brandishing from discharge?
Well, I don't have to because there was no discharge.
You don't have to, but in order to get around Harris, you're suggesting a chain of arbitrary distinctions within statutory subsections. Well,
may I suggest the
go
court
to the Supreme Court and tell them, you know, they forgot to overrule Harris in Booker.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
That's
but
what you have to do. You have to go there.
True, but let us go back to McMillan versus Pennsylvania and to Castillo. Certainly McMillan, because if ever this was a tail that was swinging the dog into a brick wall, we don't have such a case. This man would be doing, if Judge Sharp had his way with the ruling, he would be doing 97 months plus.
But McMillan is earlier, isn't it?
Yes, it
Harris?
Is. Yes, it is.
Yeah, you can't reach back to an earlier Supreme Court decision and say, well, we're going to follow that one rather than the one that deals with the identical statute and that is much later.
Well, Your Honor, I understand what the court is saying, and maybe this is one of these cases that goes up to the Supreme Court. We think and ask the court to consider the Harris decision in the Sixth Circuit for its persuasive value. But this man is facing an enormous increase in liability in a clear violation of Blakely. I think you can say Blakely does, in fact, overrule Harris. You can say we are not overruling Harris, but this court certainly has, because there is absolutely no logical way away from the fact that this man's rights have been violated under the Sixth Amendment more grievously than any of the people who have been before the court, either here or in the Supreme Court today.
Mr. Hamilton, if I may, let's put count four, the 30-year count, aside just
yes.
for a minute. Let's look at the other counts upon which your client was found guilty.
Right.
With respect to those, the judge gave him a guideline sentence, am I correct?
Yes, he did.
Now, what is your position with respect to that sentencing procedure? Does he deserve a remand under Booker with respect to those counts? Which would, I would think, substantially lower his sentence.
Definitely. We will certainly ask for a remand of the entire sentencing process. And I frankly am not in a position to discuss with the court in detail those other elements, because
it was a fairly technical, you know, mathematical thing for the judge.
Calculation
to go through,
too,
wasn't it?
Yes.
He had to make some findings in order to get that sentence.
Yes, but I cannot say to the court that Judge Sharp's findings were in excess of what was in the jury verdict. But I do not want to prejudice my client's interests, and so therefore, Your Honor, I will fall upon the record and request the court to allow this case to be remanded.
He got an upward departure for. Because it was a financial institution, he got an upward departure. Because the loss was greater than $10,000, he got an upward departure, I believe, because there was an official victim.
Yes, but all of that, Your Honor, was, I think, before the jury.
All of those you think were before the jury?
I believe they were. I believe they were, but I would stand on the verdict form.
He still would have a situation where the sentencing judge believed he was working under a mandatory system.
Correct.
And given Judge Sharp's view that the aggregate sentence in this case was far too high.
Yes.
If given the chance, and if Judge Sharp knew he had some discretion on these earlier counts.
Correct.
He may well have given a lower sentence.
Oh, absolutely.
Which would have lowered the aggregate sentence.
Especially in light of how Gerke was treated, which, well.
But you didn't have, well, why didn't you argue this?
Pardon me?
You didn't argue this.
That's correct. I was concentrating on the
But the even if we don't touch Booker, even if we don't touch that 30-year sentence,
yes,
this guy could end up with a lighter
lighter
sentence.
He could, Your Honor. Although Judge Sharp did give him the bottom of the range that he was able to give him.
But still, that was within the range that Judge Sharp thought he had to stay in.
That's correct.
And that's not the law anymore.
That's correct. And on that basis, we do ask for a remand. Now, I'm over my time, and I'll be happy to try to respond to the court's questions on plain error if I have any time on the rebuttal.
Okay.
Thank you,
Mr. Hamilton. Ms. Lowry?
May it please the court, counsel, my name is Leslie Miller Lowry, and I was one of the two trial attorneys on this case. The government submits that in the case of Chris Duncan, there was no Sixth Amendment violation with regard to the imposition of a 30-year consecutive term. Firearm type in the Seventh Circuit, under Sandoval, is a sentencing factor. Booker then gave the district courts the discretion to find sentencing factors. They just subjected that finding now to a reasonableness review. The government submits that it was eminently reasonable in this case to make the finding that the firearm carried by Chris Duncan during the robbery in this case was a machine gun.
So are you acknowledging that after Booker, the judge no longer can take that issue from the jury, resolve it himself, machine gun issue?
The government submits that the that the district court judge can resolve that issue himself based on Sandoval, that he can, the district court can find firearm type and make the
correct... But is the district court required to make a finding, and if he makes a finding, impose the 30-year sentence, or is it discretionary? Well, what is your view?
Your Honor, I believe that once the district court makes that finding, that they must impose, that they must make that finding. If there's
okay, that's the Harris rule, but isn't Mr. Hamilton right that after Booker, this has to be discretionary with the judge? Or maybe the jury has to find
it. I do not believe that the jury has to find firearm type. After Booker, I guess the...
But if it's not a machine gun, but the determination that it's a machine gun raises the statutory maximum, doesn't it?
It raises the statutory minimum.
Raise the minimum, not the maximum?
That is correct.
Maximum is life, is that it?
That's correct.
So raise the minimum. Okay. But isn't it clear after Booker that while the judge, you know, has a lot of latitude in going up toward or to the maximum, as long as he's reasonable, he can go as high as he wants, but it's no longer the case that he's required to make a finding about the machine gun, and if he finds there by preponderance there is a machine gun, he must go to the 30-year minimum.
No, with Booker, he doesn't have, the district court doesn't have to make that finding. He's not required to make that finding. However, in this case, the district court did make that finding, and the finding was based on the testimony at trial, testimony from co-defendants and testimony from other people involved with the making of these firearms. So the government submits that although not required necessarily to make that finding, there was a substantial basis and a reasonable basis on which to make the finding that the firearm at issue here was a machine gun.
But maybe he might have made the finding and decided 30 years was too great.
Once he makes the finding that it's a machine gun, the statute mandates a mandatory.
But isn't that the sort of automatic operation that Booker says it violates the Sixth Amendment?
Booker and Blakely, to my understanding, specifically exclude from their holdings mandatory minimum sentences.
Explicitly?
Yes.
They don't discuss Harris, but
they don't.
What is the? I don't understand the logic of it. If the point is that the Sixth Amendment entitles you to a trial of any fact that will increase your sentence for sure, for certain, then this violates it, because this means that if the judge makes fine, takes it away from the jury, doesn't have to make the fine. The judge makes the fine. When he makes the fine, that automatically increases the defendant's sentence. So isn't that exactly the same violation of the Sixth Amendment as in Booker?
I believe what Booker said was any sentence, any fact that raises a defendant's sentence beyond the statutory maximum. And they define statutory maximum as the maximum sentence a judge could give based on the findings of the jury. In this case, the jury found a violation of 924C. The maximum, the statutory maximum for a violation of 924C is life imprisonment. Chris Duncan did not receive life imprisonment. He received a sentence of 30 years. So in the findings by the judge did not increase, but...
No, I don't think that's right, because... If there's no machine gun, if there's no machine gun finding, there's no requirement that this person get the 30 years. So the finding on the machine gun adds 30 years automatically to his sentence.
That's correct, sir.
Isn't the essence of Booker that a judge's finding of fact cannot automatically increase a person's sentence? It may, as a matter of exercise of judicial discretion, but can't automatically jack up his sentence.
That may be true. However, if we look at the sentencing record in this case, Judge Sharp indicated that he would have no problem making the finding that this was a machine gun, even if the evidentiary burden were something else.
But do we know that he... If Judge Sharp were told you can add the 30 years, you can go up 30 years if you want, but you're not required to, are we certain that he would have imposed that?
I believe, based on the record that we have, specifically the sentencing record in this case, yes, in fact, Judge Sharp would have imposed that 30 years based on the fact that he stated that he would have no, based on the testimony, he was a trial judge.
I understand. He was very confident about the machine gun, but you could find a machine gun and think that 30 years is too harsh.
If you find the machine gun, if he makes the finding that it's a machine gun, the statute
But suppose the statute didn't require, suppose the statute just said, if you find that it's a machine gun, you may add on 30 years. Are we certain that if that were the statute, Judge Sharp would have added on 30 years rather than 20 years?
If that were the statute, we may not know, but that is not the statute. The statute says the sentence is 30 years if you make that finding. Once we made a finding that the firearm at issue here was a machine gun, the government submits that the statute requires the imposition of a 30-year consecutive mandatory sentence. With regard to plain error, even if this court were inclined to overrule Sandoval and find now that firearm type is an element of the offense that need to be proved to a jury beyond a reasonable doubt, Chris Duncan still would not prevail on a plain error analysis. Even if he could overcome the hurdle of the first three prongs, the fourth prong remains the reasonableness of the sentence. The sentence in this case on the bank robbery, although expressed by Judge Sharp to be harsh, is not unreasonable. The testimony of the witnesses and the nature and circumstances of this robbery make the sentence in this case eminently reasonable. It was at the bottom end of the guideline range, even based on the nature and circumstances of this case. So the government submits that even on a plain error analysis, that Chris Duncan would not succeed. So in conclusion, the government submits that there was no Sixth Amendment violation with regard to the imposition of a 30-year consecutive term in this case. Firearm type in the Seventh Circuit under Sandoval is a sentencing factor that Booker allows the district court to make as long as it's reasonable. And even if we choose to, if the court should choose to overrule Sandoval, Duncan cannot prevail under a plain error analysis because he cannot overcome the fourth prong of that analysis because the sentence was eminently reasonable. And the government asks that the sentence and conviction in this case be affirmed.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Lowry. Mr. Hamilton, how much time does he have? 2 minutes?
Thank you, Your Honor. Judge Sharp said in his sentencing memorandum, in my 30-plus years as a federal judge, because of the mandatory 30 years for using a machine gun, this is without a doubt the longest sentence this court has given for a bank robbery. We've got specific language. We're not looking for implication here. I'd like to go to this question. I guess part of the argument that it's reasonable is because people are assuming that being convicted of having a machine gun means that you're looking at 30 years to life. I don't see it. It is not in 18 U.S.C. 924C. If you look at that statute, there is only one subsection that talks about life imprisonment, and that is on a second offense if the firearm involved is a machine gun or a destructive device. I would suggest to the court, following Judge Scalia's very real concentration on the actual language of legislation, that provision has a negative implication that there is no life imprisonment on these mandatory minimums. What you've got here is a series of mandatory minimum / maxima. In other words, if somebody is convicted of a machine gun...
Sir, it says shall be sentenced to a term of imprisonment of not less than 30 years.
Well... True.
Not less, so it could be more.
It could be more, but what is the more? There's no limitation. And does that mean necessarily that we have to assume?
What do you think it is the limitation?
I would say that in the absence of a determination of what the outside figure is, It should be said that no less than means 30 years.
Well, that's doing considerable violence to the language.
Your Honor, I believe there's a policy of lenity.
Not a policy of rewriting clear statutory text.
All right, Your Honor. Well, I make that position. I think that we've got serious problems with this legislation, especially when you get the Sixth Circuit, for example, saying in Harris, the Sixth Circuit case, well, we believe the court is assuming that. And they're using that kind of language when construing this kind of legislation, which has such an adverse impact on defendants. Thank you very much.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Howell. And you were appointed, were you not?
Yes, sir.
Yes, well, we thank you for your efforts on behalf of your client. Thank Ms. Lowry also. Last case for argument.